Cumulus Networks is a Packetpusher sponsor, and they're announcing a brand new networking certification, the Cumulus Certified Open Networking Professional. We'll tell you more about it later in the show, but if you can't wait, go to cumulusnetworks.com/cert.
This episode of Heavy Networking is brought to you in part by the WAN Summit. The WAN Summit is a series of conferences on the SD-WAN design and strategy. It's $99 for 2 days of presentations, roundtables, and SD-WAN vendors where you can learn a hell of a lot in a very short period of time. Check out WANsummit.com for a list of worldwide events, or register for the next event, March 9th or 10th in New York.
On today's Heavy Networking episode, we're examining the state of SD-WAN. The technology is already being widely adopted to help companies cut their WAN costs by trading MPLS for business broadband and providing better visibility into and policy control over applications and performance in branch and remote offices. So where's SD-WAN going to go in the coming years? Is it going to swallow up branch security? How about endpoint and mobile device management? Could it extend its reach from the branch to become the way you manage your campus network? We're going to discuss all these questions and more. We don't have any guests for the show, but we'll draw on some recent white papers that Greg Farrow and others have published on Ignition. That's our subscription site at ignition.packetpushers.net. But let's dive right in. Let's start with where SD-WAN is today. I see SD-WAN as being very well aligned with a few emerging trends in IT. That's cloud-first initiatives, the rise of end-user experience and visibility, and the multitude of connectivity options to get users to applications and services. So let's start with cloud alignment. I'm hearing companies talk about cloud-first initiatives or cloud-first strategies, and obviously the goal is to consume or build cloud applications and services. How are you guys seeing SD-WAN positioned to facilitate this?
I think there's a couple of different aspects of this. One part of it is that a lot of your WAN operations goes to the cloud. So because SD-WAN has, you know, devices in the network, and most of the vendors offer a controller function in the cloud, so there's a cloud-hosted service that operates the SD-WAN. Some companies are still building them in-house, or they offer a choice to buy the, you know, to install the controller on-premises if that's what you want. But I think most people are choosing to use the cloud option. So in one sense, you could say that SD-WAN is cloud ready or cloudified or move to the
friendly,
cloud.
Yes.
Cloud friendly, whatever. If you think, well, my controller's in the cloud, my operations are in the cloud, and because you get the monitoring and the analytics and the asset management and the, you know, all that stuff is all part of that SD-WAN controller functionality, that's all in the cloud. So you sort of, you could say it's cloud centric if you took that view. But I do also think there's another aspect of it which is that it does radically support cloud connectivity directly. So that is, while a lot of people are installing direct connections, they're extending their MPLS backbones via MPLS backdoors into the cloud. That is not, cloud providers have been quite clear about this. They're offering the service to customers because they're asking for it, but they don't want to offer it. They would be much happier if there was no direct MPLS. They want everything to come in through the internet pipes in the front end. And that's why you see Amazon and Azure and Google handing off that MPLS stuff to a third party. They don't want to do it themselves, and they'd be happier if they didn't do it. And in some cases, you can't even, there are certain services that won't run over the direct connections. So there's certain things that will never, ever run over the MPLS connectivity circuits, just because that's not plumbed into their network. Now, they may fix that in the future, but for now, there's a lot of good reasons as to why you wouldn't use a direct connection unless you're particularly stupid, is generally my view on that one. The flip side here is that you can get your SD-WAN directly connected to a lot of the public clouds, and it is the best way because you go directly from the branch to the public cloud. You don't have to loop back down to the data center, and that means you get the faster service. So I think that's the second part of the cloud part of SD-WAN. And then there's a third part about it, which is the security, which is really emerging as a big thing for SD-WAN, and that is somebody working in a branch can send their traffic out to the SD-WAN edge. The SD-WAN then decides, does it go to a public cloud service or does it go to a platform as a service? If you want to send traffic to Office 365, it does the internet breakout locally and routes you off to the nearest Office 365 point of access. You know, they get routed via their anycast mechanisms, and boom, that's Microsoft's problem at that point. And the other one is that a lot of people are using third-party cloud access security brokers, or CASBs, to do the content scanning and the content logging. And if you put all three of those things together, so that is the cloud management of the WAN, easy access to cloud services that are hosted on the Googles or the AWSs, and then you put together the cloud security, which is really a whole topic all of its own. I think the cloud cloudification. Those are the three things that come to mind. It's not one thing, it's multiple things.
Yeah, I'd say that's very true. And that's why SD-WAN, I think, is well positioned, because they can go to an organization that's saying cloud is really where we want to be. And SD-WAN vendors can say, yes, we can facilitate it, particularly at your branch and edge locations. And here's how. And then outlining those steps you just described. Yeah.
And it's not a made up thing. It's not a pretend thing. It's not a marketing thing. It's a real thing.
Like, right.
You know, it's not like, oh, we've put some cloud inside of our SD-WAN because you can, you know, it's not like intent-based networking where we said, you just say, yeah, yeah, our network is intent-based. And, you know.
It depends on which vendor you're talking to, though. It's important to point out here that with all the cloud alignment that we've been going through and all the features that are offered in SD-WAN as a whole, if we were to take all the different solutions that are out there and look at them as a whole, all those features are there, but there's not feature parity between solutions. What you get between or among the different SD-WAN solutions varies from vendor to vendor. So you need to look exactly at what you're trying to accomplish, what sort of traffic you're trying to optimize in what sort of a topology, and then make very certain that your vendor, your SD-WAN vendor that you're considering, can actually deliver that for you, because it ain't all the same, folks. These aren't all givens that all these cloud features are necessarily going to be there or work the way you want, or if they do work, work with all the capabilities that you might actually like.
Yeah, I think that's important to mention, especially given the proliferation of SD-WAN vendors and people saying that they do SD-WAN. Not all vendors have that feature parity, so that's a good point.
That variation is quite a problem too, of course, because you never quite know. We have people emailing us, you know, and telling us that, you know, they go off into the cloud and start doing things and suddenly find that it works completely differently and they have to change everything. And all of their existing, the ways that they do things in their current data centers or their current WANs have to change dramatically. And that's it's really quite a problem, and it can often just lead to a lot of pain, I think.
All right, so let's move on to my second point about the alignment between SD-WAN and emerging trends. The next one is end-user experience or visibility. In particular, as cloud services become more widely used, the overall end-user experience becomes absolutely critical. I'm thinking about especially cloud-based voice and video conferencing or cloud business apps. Poor experience there can directly affect productivity or a business call or whatever. And rather than just having to talk about delay or jitter or packet loss, organizations are looking for more meaningful ways to measure that performance and then identify problems. It seems to me SD-WAN is positioned to also help organizations here.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about this from a QoS perspective, then that is fundamental, and that's kind of a given in the SD-WAN value proposition. One of the things that's happening here is you, in your policy controller, your policy engine, you're saying, I need certain classes of traffic to have certain kinds of treatment across the network. And the SD-WAN solution is going to monitor, well, which path can give me that quality? So if you're pushing voice across the internet and you need, therefore, a link that's low delay, low jitter, the SD-WAN will find a path that can give you that because it's doing real-time quality measurements across the link and then send the voice traffic across that link. So that is happening for sure. And then another key feature here is that when traffic conditions change, which they will, not every path across the internet is going to be the same all the time. Things are going to change. The traffic will get moved to a new path that can provide the policy, the service level agreement that you're looking for, you know, and meet that. And that's, again, I think that's really core to what SD-WAN is delivering for you. That from the first SD-WAN pitches that we were hearing back 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago? Has it been that long? I don't know. That was yeah, kind of the core
five
thing
years
that it gives you.
Well, we started talking to Viptela back in 2014, early in 2014. So it's been more than 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, boy. This is one of the things I like about SD-WAN in the sense that if you were to look at an enterprise QoS policy, where you would focus on to write the QoS policy and deliver it yourself would be primarily at the WAN links. Sure, we can talk about what it would be like when you're switching infrastructure on the LAN and all that, but by and large, QoS policy in those areas doesn't really have a lot of impact and is more or less irrelevant. That's another discussion we can argue about. But so we focus on the WAN links where there's a lot of congestion and you need those QoS policies to help you. You don't have to write those policies anymore. You let the SD-WAN box just deal with those for you. You say, I need the traffic to have this sort of treatment, and it gets it, assuming there's some link that can deliver that sort of treatment.
It's really up to the vendor to define applications, which is actually the right thing, because vendors should have a lot more capability about identifying applications than we can, especially in an era of machine learning where they can analyze traffic that's going off to Office 365 or whatever. And that's actually a genuine service, really, when you think about it. Being able to go into an access list and say, permit any traffic to Office 365. That's really what we always wanted. We didn't want to have to put IP addresses and subnet masks and UDP ports and TCP ports. What we always wanted was to say, just let Office 365 go, you know, permit that and log it over here or redirect it over there. It is a real transition in the way that we think about networking, I suspect.
Yeah, and instead of having to be tied to essentially writing policies around port and protocol, you can get very fine-grained and say, this isn't just HTTP or HTTPS traffic. This is an email going to Office 365, or this is a voice call or a video conference. And so all three of those are going to get a different service level.
It also gives you the ability to actually deliver a QoS service across a wide area on a network that you don't own, when really you couldn't do that. The best you could do was kind of push your traffic out onto the internet with having it leave egress your network with the policy and hoping that it would be delivered. SD-WAN gives you an end-to-end path measurement, and there's a much better chance that the traffic is going to be delivered as you intended it for it to be delivered, as opposed to, okay, on your way, Godspeed, and hopefully it gets to the other end with the QoS policy that you mean. That is really an advancement in QoS technology. It's hard to call, in the traditional sense, for engineers that grew up learning QoS as all these different queuing policies and class-based weighted fair queuing and RED and so on. It's not that. It's a different way to deliver QoS that, again, is a big advancement and I think is a big deal.
I think the other... There's two points here that I think we need to cover as well. One is in the interview series that we've been running, where SD-WAN vendors have been sending us their customers, particularly the Silverpeak ones, and they've been saying that they just don't worry about QoS anymore because they have so much more bandwidth because of the use of broadband instead of MPLS that they're not having performance problems. So they're not really finding, you know, if you shift from a 10 meg MPLS to dual 100 meg internet connections that you're load balancing across, effectively you're moving from 10 megs of bandwidth to 200 megs of bandwidth. The whole concept of performance problems often just disappears for some organizations, and perhaps nearly all, is from what I've found. Is that you've been sitting in a lot of those interviews, Drew? Have you seen the same thing?
Yeah, we don't hear people talk about having to fiddle with QoS settings anymore because they're essentially relying on the ability of SD-WAN to measure that performance and then switch links accordingly.
No, if you look at my QoS course on Ignition, one of the points I make in the early lessons is bandwidth is your very best QoS. QoS is making the best of a bad situation because you don't have the budget to do the right thing, which is get more bandwidth. You know, that's not the end all and the be all bandwidth, but it's 90%+ of your problems with that QoS are designed to solve are better solved by putting an appropriate amount of bandwidth in there. So it's lovely to me that the state of SD-WAN gives us this user-focused way to deliver traffic that is driven by policy that is easier to write than arcane QoS paragraphs that we've had to do for so many years that only kind of worked under the best of circumstances, despite the 27 lessons I have in that stupid QoS course.
It was not in vain, Ethan. It's still...
No. I think the other thing that we're also missing here is we always don't know what's happening to the traffic on the internet. And most SD-WAN vendors, not all, but some of the firewall companies who have implemented what they call SD-WAN, all they've really done is do dual IPsec tunnels with automated failover and some load balancing. But what they're not giving you is the visibility tools and the analytics. So the more full-featured SD-WAN, there's definitely two multiple classes of SD-WAN suppliers to my mind. And the full-featured SD-WAN implementations actually include really deep analytics and visibility. And I think that is something you really want to consider. You don't want to be just dual IPsec tunnels, fingers crossed, hope it works. You really want to be able to say, hang on, my internet connect, this dual internet service I've just put in, and, you know, sure, I might have cut the WAN budget by 65%, but I don't know if it's working well or not, or I don't know if the internet here is working. And then all of a sudden people start complaining and you've got no way of knowing if the internet in that branch office is not as good as where it is in the other one. So you, I think the visibility tooling is super important to SD-WAN, and you really want to have it. You've got an opportunity to save money, spend money on buying a better quality SD-WAN experience that's got visibility and analytics so you can see where the application performance problems are. I think SD-WAN should have application performance built in, and you should be able to see, oh, my Oracle is running slower than normal. Or I've got a group of branch offices in this country and their performance is 50% worse than it is in any other country that I'm running around the world. Therefore, I need to do something different in that location because the performance is wrong. And I think those tools are really important, much more than they've ever been before, because you don't have the guaranteed MPLS and you've also got the money. You've got the money left over from getting rid of your MPLS services and down and upgrading the bandwidth. You need to have it, I think. You want to take this opportunity and seize it with both hands.
Well, it's another one of those situations, though, where being able to recognize applications, show you in the monitoring tool what the applications are doing, does vary by platform. It's another one of those you got to look at deeply. A few of the SD-WAN vendors have made a very big deal about having deep application identification capability. They wrote it all in-house. It's a very big deal. Many of the other SD-WAN vendors are using someone else's application identification database, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's right. Just, you know, is that good enough for what you're wanting to do? So there's different specialties within application identification that are worth digging into if you have very specific application identification needs. And also, what happens when you have a custom application in-house, because there's lots of you that do, can you write some kind of an application identification template that you can use in your SD-WAN policy to make sure that whatever that special custom application is you've written internally gets special treatment that you can define by policy?
It's true. I mean, you could still do a lot of it by buying a third-party analytics engine, you know, get an extra hop type environment so that you're monitoring the traffic with a third-party thing. And I think, and the value of that, of course, is having an independent or a separate solution from the SD-WAN means that you can bring together the data sources from not only your SD-WAN, but from those sites which are still connected to the legacy. So you can monitor the old network and the new network. And maybe if you get into a situation where you have multiple brands of SD-WAN, I think it's important to think about SD-WAN as an over-the-top, and they're all very proprietary inside themselves. So if you want to think about how do you not get locked into an SD-WAN vendor, the way to do it is to have two SD-WAN vendors. We're now bringing together the monitoring, and they're going to produce their own networks, right? So they're not going to interoperate in the traditional manner. You need to think about it differently. So maybe having a third-party visibility tool can be a good choice here, so that you have the analytics is independent from the SD-WAN box. It's going to come down to cost and what your specific company needs out of its situation, how much MPLS they're going to keep, or maybe you've got satellite links or something like that. It's hard to know.
Right, but you want to make sure that base SD-WAN package you're getting provides you some visibility, including application identification as well as basic link performance. You get that end user experience picture.
Yeah, I think so. I think you definitely want to have the analytics per application, not per packet. No one cares about the packets anymore.
Exactly. I mean, at some point you may need to care about per packet, but for the overall big picture, you want to have that dashboard that tells you yes, green or red.
Yeah, sorry, I was exaggerating a little bit for the purpose, but you know, at the end of the day, a packet capture is the ultimate source of truth. I absolutely agree with that. But I think today we do a lot of packet captures even when we don't need to. Mm-hmm. And that potentially the use of packet captures will become much less if you've got suitable analytics. And because all this stuff is stored in the cloud, a lot of these SD-WAN companies can do quite sophisticated analytics that we have never been able to do before, because they're aggregating data from, you know, hundreds of customers, and they've got new ways to fingerprint. They've got more data to analyze on. They can bring machine learning into the mix. It does seem to be very exciting to me.
And I think there an opportunity in the future for SD-WAN is going to be building in or integrating with APM, application performance monitoring tools, that are actually looking at the performance of the application itself, all of the services and the OS and the application code itself. Because there's only so much that a WAN monitoring product can do in terms of saying, yes, this was a good path or a bad path. If an end user is still experiencing problems, there could be other issues. And so being able to integrate more data, richer data, will be useful down the line. That's, I think, an integration point that the SD-WAN vendor should be looking at.
You still haven't solved the data center monitoring problem or application monitoring in the data center or the campus for that matter. But where you have, and that's a different point.
Right, where you're a cloud provider.
No, you're cloud provider.
Oh, it's a huge point of discussion all over the industry. I've been listening to a lot of Kubernetes-related stuff, and that's a massive problem that people are trying to solve. It's even more challenging in that environment with ephemeral workloads and a variety of containers spread out and, you know, monitoring what the end user experiences and so on. It's a big problem that isn't going to get solved. Not in 2020, maybe 2021.
Weirdly,
no, let's see.
Weirdly, the companies who actually have that problem with containers and large-scale containers have taken an SD-WAN approach. You call it a service mesh, but it's actually SD-WAN just inside the container infrastructure. If you look at it the right way, if you know what I'm saying, Istio service mesh is exactly SD-WAN just taken to the data center.
Let's pause for a short message from one of today's sponsors, Cumulus Networks. Did you know that in 2019, there are probably more than 100 IT networking certification credentials? So why would Cumulus launch another one? Because what's out there doesn't address open, standard, Linux-based switching and infrastructure networking. Cumulus believes that open networking is inevitable, so the company's built a training and certification program to prepare engineers for the future. Take your networking skills up a notch and become a true solutions architect in open systems by becoming a Cumulus Certified Open Networking Professional, or CCONP. What's in the program? You'll learn Linux networking fundamentals, including essential concepts and commands behind Linux-based open networking. You'll learn Cumulus Core. That's everything you need to know to become proficient in Cumulus Linux. And of course, you'll be ready to take the Cumulus Certified Open Networking Professional Exam and become CCONP certified. And the first 100 to earn the cert will get exclusive swag. To learn more about the program and to get started, head to cumulusnetworks.com/cert. That's cumulusnetworks.com/cert. And Cumulus also wrote about its new program on packet pushers. So if you want even more detail, go to packetpushers.net and search for the State of Networking Certifications. We thank Cumulus for being a sponsor. And now, back to the show. The good thing about SD-WAN with its measurements of performance is that it gives you that mean time to innocence. If it actually is not the network and it's an application level problem, at least you have that, you can go to your boss or reference and say, yes, we can prove it's not us.
And I think that's really important that networking professionals have that information. I released a very short BIB last week, Briefings in Brief, which is a channel where we push out 10 to 15 minute podcasts. And I'm hoping to put more stuff out there a little bit more. And I talked there about the principles of data-driven networking. And that is, if you're a networking professional and you are delivering a network design, quite often it just comes down to my opinion is, or my experience says that this is the best way to go. And, or you go to a vendor best practices or something like that, and you end up saying, the vendor says that this is the best practice, so we'll just do that because I don't know what else to do. And I think we really have to get to the point where we have data, we have charts, we have proof that this bandwidth is working the way it's working, or, if I was to add this much more internet bandwidth, then here's a chart showing that I delivered a return on that. Or I should be able to pull data from my infrastructure to show that it's overloaded and go back to the management and say, here's the chart of the consumption, therefore this design activity should deliver this result. Deliver the design activity and come back and say, yes, this met the goal. No, it didn't. And if it doesn't meet the goal, you should then be able to go to the reseller or the vendor and say, your product didn't meet the goals that we set you. You have to come and take it back, or you have to give us a refund, or you have to make good. I think data-driven infrastructure is something that people should be thinking about.
And it's not just data, it's also context. And that's something that a good SD-WAN product is going to give you. It's not just there was a problem. It's that I can see at this time period on this link with this set of applications, X, Y, and Z was happening. It's that a context around it, not just raw data being dumped in your lap and you have to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I think we have to get smarter as designers too. It's not enough to just say, go to the shopping list and pick one of the new products and throw that into the hole. We have to be smart. There's so much more choice now in the network. You could get, really expensive branded SD-WAN from your traditional IT networking supplier, or you could go and get a white box and hand roll your own, use a virtual SD-WAN capability and take it from there, which one's the right choice? Well, unless you've got data to help you make those decisions, you may just end up spending loads of money. And you've heard me say plenty of times, enterprise IT doesn't care how much something costs. They just want something, you know, so just blow the money and be done, you know.
I feel like we're going in a different direction on this podcast and we need to get back to the SD-WAN stuff. But this topic has been on my mind a lot. And the problem here is context. We can provide data, but getting context around the data is the big challenge that I think we're struggling with. There's humans that know how to interpret the data and can provide that context. But what we really want is software that kind of tells us. Yeah. And that seems to be pretty hard to deliver. How do you programmatically interpret data and provide context that is meaningful to a human trying to make a decision? That's tough. I that's what we need, because there's too much data to do otherwise.
Yep.
At the same time, how the heck do you frame the data up in such a way that it is accurately useful to those designers who are trying to make architectural decisions and purchasing decisions? That is a difficult problem to solve.
It is, but it's no worse than pulling something out of your butt and going, that's the answer. I'm going to go forward. Let's go and spend $5 million on that, right?
But if you have enough experience, the answer you pull out of your butt is probably a good one.
Well, hello.
Just saying.
My butt is magic. Is that what you're trying to say?
Magic butts all around. That's exactly what we're saying. Yeah.
Oh, I get certified in magic butt problem
identification. There's an unexpected. There's an unexpected turn in the conversation.
All right, let's try to steer this back to someplace more reasonable. Another point I wanted to bring up is the new plethora of connectivity options in the way that SD-WAN aligns there. Again, this ties back to the cloud. We're seeing more ways to get access to applications and services, and SD-WAN, I think, is positioned to enable customers to mix and match these options. We talked a little bit about one of them, internet breakout. I want to get to a SaaS application or a cloud application as quickly as possible rather than backhauling to a data center. SD-WAN lets me do internet breakout. We've also talked a little bit about going
Hang on a second, Drew. I want to follow up on that. So internet breakout is in folks who are very used to centralized internet where you're backhauling everything to your headquarters so you can do security inspections and stuff. You don't have to do that. You break out from the branch and you're layering on a security service of some kind. Either it's built into your SD-WAN appliance so you get sufficient security, or you're able to direct traffic to a third-party inspection service like Zscaler to give you the security that you had, but you're gaining an efficiency to that cloud service that's up on the internet by not having to backhaul it to headquarters, however far away that might be and however much latency that adds, plus your own internal security that's appliances that are probably being overloaded with inspection work and farming it out elsewhere. That's, again, kind of a big deal to be able to do that, and I think that's a modern and critical architecture that SD-WAN is giving you, while still having it be a manageable thing. Not, I have 1,000 offices and there's no way I'm going to handle all of that remote security inspection devices. You can still manage those with the right SD-WAN architecture. There are a number of systems out there, if you need that allow you to do that.
We did a show recently with someone who switched to SD-WAN, and they were making the point that using a cloud access security broker, CASB, meant that for the first time, he finally felt like he had a consistent security policy everywhere in the network. Because as he got further and further away from head office, the firewalls and the content scanning infrastructure was, well, less. You know, a small branch didn't justify having a full proxy, and he didn't know what the users were doing. And so his security perimeter wasn't consistent across the entire company. And once he switched to an SD-WAN solution with a CASB, he was able to guarantee that everything got the same point. And I think he's even moving to use the CASB for direct anybody who's out there. Like if you're using a company laptop just unconnected to a branch network, you're still going through the same CASB. So for the first time, he's got a consistent edge access policy for everybody in the company, which was a feature.
Something else that we talked about in terms of connectivity is internet with or instead of MPLS. Greg, you and I have had multiple conversations with customers who are either bolstering MPLS with a broadband pair or just ditching MPLS in favor of dual broadband right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think the consistent lesson here is just ditch the MPLS right out of the gate. Nobody we've spoken to has said that having MPLS worked better than having internet, except when you're in certain countries where the internet is restricted or controlled. And there might be a situation where having an MPLS in some countries where the internet might be massively overloaded, or, and this is where the monitoring in the SD-WAN is important. I think you should assume that you want internet first and prove that you need MPLS rather than have MPLS and then use internet if it works. I think the reverse assumption is true, and that's not intuitively correct. And a lot of that is not because the internet is better. Generally, what we find is that you could buy, for the price of a 10 meg MPLS, you can buy 100 meg internet and still save 50%. So you're automatically getting 10 times the bandwidth. And then you get 200 megs and you've got 20 times the bandwidth. And everything just works better. So in this case, you're better off just spending money, going straight to internet, and then using the analytics feature of your SD-WAN to monitor if the internet in that location isn't working well.
It's worth pointing out that we have also heard from a number of people who are saying, well, we used SD-WAN as a club to renegotiate our MPLS contract. So yeah, it kind of takes the cost out of the equation because the service provider doesn't want to lose the revenue, entirely lose the revenue from the MPLS business. So they'll just knock down the circuit costs. You keep that around. And some people have chosen to do that in certain circumstances. That's made sense. Particularly if you're running a global WAN, yes, broadband from an architectural perspective is lovely, but maybe you don't want to manage 750,000 ISPs that are providing you broadband services, yeah, which means in some cases you're going to stick with MPLS circuits in certain places. And again, you just clobber them over the head with cost, and they'll bring that price down for you to make it a little more reasonable to hang on to it.
And the lesson I learned recently is that there are actually telco brokers out there. So if you do have, you know, 1,000 internet connections, you can actually find people who will take on that billing. All they do is aggregate the billing of those 1,000 internet connections. And the same thing applies to 4G, 5G. If you're going to put a 4G network onto your SD-WAN, which is entirely reasonable, you don't actually have to buy each SIM independently. You can actually go directly to the telco and buy a terabyte of data from the telco, from the mobile carrier. And they'll give you, you know, give you the SIMs for free, and you pay per terabyte of data across all the circuits.
The unspoken part of this conversation is you can do this without having to think very hard on the SD-WAN side. Like, oh, if you're trying to do this with a traditional router, like a DMVPN overlay, it's like, oh gosh, I got to think about IP addressing. I got to think about routing adjacencies. I got to think about where my tunnel endpoints are. You don't have to think about any of that stuff with SD-WAN. That's part of the table stakes for an SD-WAN solution. You give it bandwidth, the IPs get stood up, the tunnels get stood up all automatically for you. So your ability to buy a circuit has been democratized from a technical perspective. Just throw bandwidth at it, get the circuit stood up, and let the SD-WAN overlay take care of the rest for you. And it's done in an automated way, not the manual headache you'd have to do standing up tunnels yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Once it's connected to the internet, the SD-WAN box can dial home. You know, it can go and it knows where the vendor's cloud platform is, and it just says, hello, I'm here. And it goes, oh, you belong to Ethan. I know what configuration you need. And, you're there? I've got a configuration ready to go for you. And it even does a code update, updates to the latest settings and all that sort of stuff, and then loads the configuration that it needs because you've already configured in the controller. It is quite different.
Some other connectivity options that are emerging, again, being driven by cloud providers, are things like Direct Connect and Express Route. We're essentially building a private connection directly into an AWS or an Azure, usually working with a third party like an Equinix or something to provide that connectivity. But there are ways for SD-WAN to help you tie branch or, you know, larger remote offices into that if you need to, as well as cloud backbones, where, again, the big cloud providers have built their own cloud backbones across their regions and zones and are now offering that connectivity as a service to their customers. And again, it's another way for SD-WAN to allow you to connect into that.
Yeah, an SD-WAN provider that can deal with those things is kind of important to make sure they deal with it right, because the routing there can get tricky. Asymmetric routing problems are a concern with some of the public IP address spaces where, oh, I'm sending it over Direct Connect and it's coming back to me over the internet. That's not good. But having an SD-WAN provider that can deal with those things intelligently and actually knows Direct Connect, Express Route, how to set up the BGP peering, et cetera, is kind of a big deal. Again, make sure you shop this carefully and the proof of concept works as expected.
Let me interrupt for a quick second to talk about today's sponsor, WAN Summit. Networking professionals are gathering at the WAN Summit in New York this March. And at any WAN Summit, you'll know, networking professionals join to share their unique WAN experiences. This conference series lets you understand and appreciate how others are tackling the same experiences as you. People get up on stage and talk about how they selected and deployed their SD-WAN, and what strategies they use to boost bandwidth while minimizing the cost. And people are increasingly talking about security in the SD-WAN context. And it's really interesting to get around roundtables and talk to other people about how their networks work, what their routers are, and how they're looking at adopting SD-WAN or deploying it already. Now, WAN summits happen all around the world, and you can find a full list of them at wansummit.com, and I mean around the world, Australia, UK, Europe, New York, all over the place. But this WAN summit is happening in March 9 to 10th at the Hilton Midtown. It's their seventh year in New York. They're expecting over 360 WAN professionals, which is a pretty good crowd. And as an enterprise, you register at the special rate of only $99. Plus, listeners of the Packet Pushers get an extra 20% off with the code Packet Pushers when they register for New York. So that's $80 to get down to our conference all about SD-WAN. That's well worth doing. Again, all the details are at wansummit.com, as you think, and we hope to see you there. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so we've talked a little bit about where SD-WAN is today. Let's talk a little bit about where we think SD-WAN is going. Greg, you've been talking about and also wrote about one idea where SD-WAN is essentially starting to swallow a lot of security capabilities, either on the box itself or by leveraging a CASB, a Cloud Access Security Broker. Is this the right place for security to be in an edge appliance in your SD-WAN environment?
I think so. And it's a confusing mishmash of ideas, and there are SD-WAN vendors covering the entire spectrum here. And this is the reason that there's so many SD-WAN vendors is because they're all often doing something different. So what we are now seeing is that SD-WAN appliances are now including full-on security features. So they are, I would say to you that most SD-WAN appliances are already next-generation firewalls. It's just a question of whether you call it that or not. But to my mind, an SD-WAN edge box, it's got application identity, it does forwarding, it does permissions and blocking, it does the logging, they're hardened, maybe not quite as hardened as some of the other firewalls, but they're certainly hardened up enough devices. And they've got centralized configuration and logging. I mean, all the things that we get in a firewall are already there in an SD-WAN device. What I do think is important here is that what an SD-WAN effectively does is move the security perimeter right to the edge, to the branch. Instead of it being, for most purposes, we used to define the security edge as the data center, where the WAN edge came in, and there would be a security perimeter there, and we kind of put a lot of inspection and because that was the only bit we could control. But with SD-WAN, we're actually moving the security right out to the edge because we do the firewalling effectively, or the security edge security functions all the way out there. And that has become self-evident to a certain group of SD-WAN companies who are now actually turning their whole SD-WAN networks into security services. So we've seen, we've done a series of podcasts in 2019 with Open Systems, and they're a security company that has an SD-WAN product, and they have a SOC, they do 24/7 monitoring, they do incident response, they do threat management. And I think that makes perfect sense. Kato Systems is another one that's in this same space where, this edge device, if it had a threat detection feed, then it would genuinely be a fully functioned next-generation firewall as much as a Palo Alto or a fully featured checkpoint instantiation is. And you want that because that's where you want the security getting closer and closer to the endpoint as possible. So the second generation of SD-WAN is already here, is what I've been saying, and it is this security in the SD-WAN, and it's pushing these functions out to the edge. And the useful part about it, perhaps, is as you push these functions out to the edge, the processing power and the computing is all done at smaller and smaller scale. So if you're doing the security inspection, the threat detection, the threat management, the threat response at the branch level, you don't have to get this massive big firewall with, high resiliencies, and it costs $1 million and it takes 2 years to plan how to replace it. You just distribute it all around the edge of the network. It's much less painful and much easier to live with.
I'd be a little cautious in assuming that all SD-WAN appliances qualify as firewalls. Depending on what your compliance obligations are, the device may or may not be a firewall by some definition. I do agree that in principle, that's what's happening for all the reasons you just said, Greg. So I won't belabor that point, but I do think people need to be a little cautious that if they want that SD-WAN security device to actually be a firewall and they have compliance regulations that apply to them, they need to be very clear with the vendor, is it or is it not indeed a firewall?
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to some SD-WAN vendors who very clearly state, yeah, we're stateful inspection firewall, we'll say that, but we won't say we're next generation. So if that's what you're looking for, you'll have to partner or use a CASB.
And the point is that there is no definition for firewall. If you go out onto the internet, like literally, right, Palo Alto says they're a firewall. Well, who says they're a firewall? They do. Cisco says its SourceFire is a firewall. Well, who says that? They do. There's no actual definition. There's no RFC. There's no body that certifies this to be a firewall. The one that does it is laughably, if you read the NIST firewall definition, you'll have a laugh. They're the only organization who certify that a firewall is a firewall. And if you read the definition, it's really laughably incomplete and it's trivial to do. And as we've seen plenty of times in 2019, a lot of these firewalls aren't very secure at all. They've been readily attacked. The SSH engines have been wide open to attack. Several of Cisco's firewall products, especially around their VPN functions, have been trivially hacked throughout the year repeatedly. So you can claim you're a firewall, but there's no legal definition except for the one that you make for yourself.
I guess that's true, but I also feel like there's sort of a... an accepted market definition that's going to satisfy, you know, your compliance officers one way or the other. So you do have to, you have to play the game.
Yeah, I guess you do. I know.
One issue though with this, I agree that I see more and more security functions being added into an SD-WAN appliance. And we've talked to customers who say, yeah, we're ditching separate firewalls at each branch because it's cheaper and easier to manage when you put it all in one box. But then the problem with putting it all in one box is one, if that box fails, you're in trouble. And two, what happens when you start turning on more and more features to performance on that box? And I think that's definitely a consideration to keep in mind.
Yeah, and this is where the good SD-WAN vendors have got the monitoring and the analytics in place so that you know that this is happening. And part of the basic SD-WAN package in the, you know, this cloud centrally managed service is that it often is able to monitor the memory consumption and the CPU and just tell you, you know, I'm out of CPU, get another one, get a bigger one. So it's not the problem.
A
that
new box
once
is on the way. Your credit card has been charged.
Yeah, and you're not pulling it, you know, every 5 minutes with an SNMP. It's a little bit more sophisticated. You know, telemetry and things like that means there's streaming telemetry going off to the SD-WAN provider. And I think another part to think of too is that this, the old days of routers using 10-cent CPUs and obsolete memory because the vendors thought they could shove this junk at customers is gone. Most of the SD-WAN appliances are using high-quality x86 CPUs with the latest range of DDR, you know, DRAMs, and they've got SSDs inside a lot of those appliances. They're not expensive. I mean, you can get a white box x86 server like an Intel NUC that can handle 10 gigs of throughput, and it costs less than $500. That's in the retail market. So in the sort of vendor appliance market where you go and deal with a white box maker out of China and you want an SD-WAN appliance, it's not very expensive to get a server class CPU, 16 gigs of DRAM, and a 2 terabyte SSD as an appliance at the edge of your network.
Yeah, I take your point, but I still just get worried when I think about all of the encryption and decryption that's happening, all the policy enforcement, all the policy monitoring, all the traffic monitoring, all of the work that's being done on that one box. And I think back to the early days of UTM when vendors would come in and pitch their product and we'd ask them, okay, what happens when I switch on everything? And they got this look on their face like, oh, I wish you hadn't asked that. So,
well, maybe we should ask some people. So let's make a note of that and ask some people going forward in future podcasts about performance of the SD-WAN appliances and listen to what they have to say.
All right, so we'll leave that there to push on a little bit. Greg, you wrote a white paper recently and you posited 4 phases of SD-WAN evolution. We've kind of already talked about the first two, with phase one being path dynamics and visibility and phase two being security features being integrated into the box. Let's dig into 3 and 4. So your phase 3 on the evolution is endpoint and identity management, meaning SD-WAN is going to start to incorporate end-user device management, i.e. smartphones and mobile devices, and take on aspects of identity management.
Okay, so let me explain this. Once you've got an SD-WAN set up, right, you've got all of these SD-WAN devices sending data together and your IPsec tunnels have all been orchestrated by a central controller, the obvious next thing is, why don't my endpoints, why doesn't my smartphone VPN clients or my laptop VPN clients just connect to the SD-WAN service, right? Why would you still have a VPN endpoint hosted in a data center somewhere? Really, what you want is for it to just connect directly to your SD-WAN and get the same access as though it's a branch. And logically, I think certain SD-WAN vendors are already heading in that direction. So the first step, I think, for the third phase of SD-WAN is remote access VPNs will just become part of the SD-WAN, and there'll be big SD-WAN sites called branches, and then there'll be remote access, which will be laptops and smartphones, and they'll have clients, and when you connect, you'll actually VPN directly into the SD-WAN manager, and then that will then break you out to the CASB or send you off to the cloud or route you down to the data center as using the same policies that a branch would, right? Because you've already got all of that cloud infrastructure, you've got the policy, why isn't that just being put straight into the laptop that's roaming around the world? So that would be the first phase. And as soon as you've got an endpoint management solution, because now I've got iPhones and I've got laptops with IPsec clients, once you've got that, now that is a substantial transition. Writing software, VPN software to go on endpoints is a substantial change, but I think it's inevitable. The second part is you also need to do identity. So you need to authenticate people. The obvious part is to start integrating with Active Directory and just doing username and password. But beyond that, I think we've seen a lot of identity management solutions come on with the zero trust boundary thing, the Google Beyond 2000 type of thing where every app gets authenticated. Well, if you've got the SD-WAN functionality there in the cloud, the logical extension of that is to say, well, I'll start using the application inspection functions there to actually take control of this zero trust networking, this zero trust boundary, and say, I see you logged in as such and such, but now you're accessing this application and you're not allowed to because you're not in the group that's allowed access to that group. And that should be applied to VPNs, and it could be applied in the branch as well. So I think the phase three comes with two parts. It comes with endpoint management, specifically remote access. And in the branch, you'll still have your traditional wired and your printers and whatever it is that you have in the branch, you know, whatever. I think you'll still see people, you know, doing branch in a box. That means wired and wireless. So you'll have a Wi-Fi attached, and the identity management will be part of the wireless in the branch as well, and there's already customers, you know, some SD-WAN vendors heading down that path. But to me, the next phase after the security integration, the SASE, you know, where we already talked about, the third phase is endpoint VPNs and the management of identity and the integration of that into the SD-WAN.
So I'm curious, I mean, we've already got NAC, we've already got things like Cisco ICE, Aruba, ClearPass. Are we just reinventing the wheel, or are you trying to munge these things together?
Well, I think the challenge with ICE and various forms of NAC is that they assume that the network is the control point. So mostly they're triggered when you connect to the network. So when the Ethernet port goes active or when you attach to the Wi-Fi. And my general assumption is that works fine in the campus where you actually connect to the network. But as you move into the 5G mobile networking, my point would be is that, and I'm sort of coming to the realization that campus has a very short life ahead of it. There's a good chance that 5G networking will become cheaper than running a campus network, at least in some countries of the world. And what I mean by that is the only reason we have campus networks today is because, it was the only way you could build a network on your premises, because a lot of us built campuses before there was mobile phones. And the second reason is it's still cheaper to put a campus network in than it is to just give everybody a 5G networking connection or a 4G networking connection. So as the world transitions where mobile networking becomes more ubiquitous and the price of 3G, 4G, 5G continues to sort of get cheaper, which it has to do, I think, in the long term, unless there's some sort of, you know, specific thing regional to your country or whatever, then eventually campus, that whole network as the enforcement point goes away. When if 30% of your devices are connected to 5G, why would you? NAC's got what? What does it do for you?
Yeah, so you're sort of teasing your phase four notion of SD-WAN, in which SD-WAN is going to extend from the branch back into the campus, and that essentially an SD-WAN controller will integrate your physical campus network and an overlay.
Yeah, I think this could go a couple of different ways. And of course, we're looking a long way into the future here. The point here is that we've seen a lot of Cisco particularly has been aggressively pursuing the software-defined campus with its solution.
SD Access.
And they're trying to put an overlay network over the top of a campus. I believe that SD-WAN will pave over the campus because it makes, I think in the future, the WAN will be bigger than the campus is, in the sense that users will become more mobile. There'll be less people in offices. There'll be more people in regional locations over time. This will be very unevenly distributed, right? So if you've got a head office with 20 floors in a building, no, not so much, right? But my view is that eventually SD-WAN will probably reach in and control the overlay on your campus network. So users that come into the office and connect to the Wi-Fi would still be connecting to your SD-WAN controller for identity and endpoint management and device management. You know, does this device have all this stuff integrated? And your physical campus just becomes like an extension of the internet, if you like, a public WAN, extension of the public WAN into your premises. And it just happens to be there because it's cheaper and faster than using 5G in head office buildings. And so eventually your campus will just be replaced by your SD-WAN, and at which point it just becomes what I call the data in motion network. So there's two, I think the future here is that there's two types of networks. One is your data at rest, and that is your data center, your public cloud infrastructure, and there's a certain type of networking associated with that. It's high speed, it's orchestrated, it's inside the four walls of your data center or inside the four walls of a cloud, and most of the data there is at rest. And there's another network where it's data in motion. It's where the access happens, where the branch accesses the data center. And instead of there being a campus and a wireless, a wired campus, a wireless campus, and a WAN and a VPN network and having four different solutions for those, they will merge into one over time and become the data in motion network. So as the end users access services, whether it's public cloud, private cloud, PaaS, SaaS, there's a data in motion network for that. And over these four phases, over the next 5 to 10 years, it will all converge into just one. And the campus network will be sublimated or subsumed into the SD-WAN controller. For some vendors, I could see that, you know, Cisco's SD-WAN strategy hasn't perhaps got the excitement that some of the other vendors have. And they might supplement their SD-WAN into the campus, the SD campus, because that would make sense. But that doesn't make my prediction any less true. My point is that in the end, there's two types of networking in the long-term future, a data in motion network and a data at rest network, and you'll have just two solutions, one for each of those two, rather than the multi-siloed, everything's different and everything's special and, you know, special privileges for that type of networking. I think it all goes away in the long term.
So essentially, I'll have a controller for my campus. I'll have a set of controllers for, you know, whatever WAN access I have, and then potentially some kind of controller in the data center.
I think the campus would have an underlay controller. So you might have a physical network and there's some sort of controller just looking after that. A bit like some of the ways people are deploying data center networking today, they might use NSX as the overlay for their VMware infrastructure. And they might have a service mesh, an Istio service mesh for the Kubernetes. And then underneath that, they've got a tool for orchestrating the physical network. I think the campus will have like an SD-WAN, which is have a controller that looks like, you know, brings the wired and the wireless wired Ethernet together. But the network that runs over the top is nothing to do with the underlay. It's the overlay network. And you might even have multiple overlays for various different purposes. But that's a little harder to pick out. I think that's a possible direction for development.
Ethan, comments, pushback?
We're talking about 5 or 10 years into the future, so I don't care.
That's fine for you, Greg.
In all seriousness, there is I agree that this is a potential direction that this could all go, but so much depends on what 5G looks like in that prognostication. So I'm very much in a wait and see mode, but I do agree this is a possible logical direction that things head. Yeah,
yeah, it's a thought exercise in effect.
But yeah.
It's like, I think it's, you know, and like much analysis where you're trying to see where things go, it can be very difficult to make a good, but I think the case I make here is not unreasonable. And it is also useful from a design perspective that if you're sitting down to look at a 10-year design, I think the thing I'd like you to take away is that there is no 10-year design. The best you can design for right now is 3 years. So you should base your ROI and your spending calculations on the assumption that in 3 years, whatever it is you're using today should be thrown in the bin and you're going to burn it down and start again. So you want to buy a solution that is low cost, You want to buy something that can be easily thrown away. So not so much, it's not so much about avoiding lock-in. It's about what I call about embracing the lockout. How do you get out of it into the next thing? And don't get too caught up on features, imagining that, you know, we've talked to plenty of people recently who've had their campus network in same for 20 years. And when you talk to them, they're like thinking of, I'm going to buy a 8-slot chassis that's got all this flexibility. And I'm going, no, just buy something that you can use like a printer cartridge and throw it out in 2 years' time and replace it. That's the right way to go. And think about your design in the context of something that's much more fungible and fluid, rather than getting hooked up on a, oh, it's going to be in place for 20 years. So we can spend 10 times as much as we might if we could just, you know, instead of buying white box, I'll buy this really expensive box with precious unicorn magic inside and a backplane. And, you know, no, those days are gone. I really think those days are behind us. And you've got to start thinking in 3-year, maximum 5-year strategy plans.
Okay. A little design prognostication there.
Yeah, I think so. Otherwise, you're going to miss the transitions. You're going to be stuck with this infrastructure that you overpaid for. Or maybe you won't be. Maybe you'll have quit and retired or something, like a lot of networking engineers do, or moved on. Somebody else will be stuck with it. I think the right thing is to make very short-term decisions and look for a rapid replacement and rapid cycling of your strategy over time and not get stuck into a long-term. This is where I think Cisco's SD access strategy sort of causes me some stress, because it's very much a, we've got this plan and it's for 20 years and you've got the software and we've got this and, you know, does it? And I'm sort of thinking like, yeah, but what about the innovation that's going to come between now and 5 years' time? I'm not seeing the embracing of that yet. I'm not feeling assured that sort of strategy works for that.
So we've spent a long time talking about sort of the merits and the positives around SD-WAN. And if you're thinking about getting into it or building a short list, let's also talk about some hard questions or some issues that you want to raise with vendors or providers that you're thinking about bringing on, because I feel like, I guess the first 50 minutes were sort of the unicorn magic and fairy dust, and now we've got to bring a little reality back in. So we raised a few issues, but what are some things that are top of mind for you guys when thinking about the snarls and the gnarly side of SD-WAN?
Tough one. I think the part that you need to think about is all your decisions are made in the design phase, and that operationally these things are actually quite easy to live with. We did a podcast recently, Heavy Networking 483, Ethan, where you and I, we both got very excited about SD-WAN. It's not too long ago.
Right.
And Alexander wrote back to us and said he made some specific observations. He's been deploying SD-WAN for a couple of different people. And he said, probably the most essential mark made during this show, and this one deserves repeating, is that no flag day is needed. You can migrate a site at the time. And he said, second is no special training is required for installation. So he's sort of going with our point that starting down the SD-WAN path isn't an all or nothing. You could start and do 5 sites with vendor A. Just pick a vendor, go and do 5 sites, roll them out and play with it. And if it doesn't work, pick it up, put it in the bin and replace them with another vendor and do 5 sites and see how that works. It's not unlike the old days where, you know, if you decided to switch from Cisco routers to Juniper routers, you had to complete retraining in the CLI and you had to work out what protocols had to interoperate and work out an interoperability config on the OSPF or the BGP, and that never worked, and you never knew quite. That's all gone. That's a completely different way of approaching it. So I think you have dozens of choices for SD-WAN vendors. I've laid out a strategy in the white paper about the 4 phases. There's basic SD-WAN with path dynamics and the ability to have multiple destinations, branch breakout. You've got your zero-touch provisioning. You've got your visibility and analytics tools. You've got to decide which of those features are relevant to you. Some people like buying SD-WAN from companies that were WAN acceleration vendors, so that if they want to get some QoS or they want to improve the performance, they can go and get a little extra licensing and turn on the WAN acceleration for a couple of applications. We've had a few people say to us that was important to them. Mm-hmm. If security is the thing that hits your buttons, then go and talk to the SD-WAN vendors that have security features built in and start to evaluate those choices. If you're, you know, more interested in the analytics of visibility, make a decision around whether you go for a basic SD-WAN. Maybe, you know, we've talked about Fortinet's SD-WAN with their IPsec implementations. And then maybe you buy a third party like an ExtraHop to do the visibility tooling. So you get the whole solution, but you're putting it together in a way that works for you.
I want to interject here that if you're buying mentality is Cisco first, and if they can't do, you know, the thing, then I'm going to go look at, you know, something else begrudgingly because Cisco first. You'd be mistaken to do that in the SD-WAN realm. Yeah, I'm not trying to dump on Cisco here, but just making the point that there is a lot of SD-WAN vendors here. And if you're thinking because Cisco, obviously that's where I'm going to go, I don't care what you guys say, you're missing out on a lot of different vendors that are doing extremely well and innovative things in the space. You know, Cisco bought Viptela, and since then we've heard from different folks that are struggling with their implementations because they just went and bought that. That's not to say everyone else is, you know, bug free and it's amazing because we're hearing about bugs on a lot of different platforms.
Yeah.
Don't just assume though, because your networking history and background is Cisco, that that's the only SD-WAN solution you should be considering and the rest of this conversation is irrelevant. The reason we talked about all this and we're giving you all these questions and features and functionalities to educate you as you diligently shop through an extensive list of SD-WAN vendors, how to evaluate who is right and wrong for you. It's not all coming from Tasman Drive necessarily, and that's not necessarily the obvious choice for you. It is a valid one, but may not necessarily be the right one for you. Kind of a big deal to make that point because, and I say that, so many people come to us in the back channel and just say, yeah, but I'm going to buy Cisco, obviously, right? Not obviously, not necessarily right.
And I think the market has spoken because there is 50, 60, 70 different SD-WAN vendors, and they wouldn't exist if they didn't have something that customers wanted. You know, CloudGenix, Telari, which is now at Oracle, there's so many different, and a lot of these SD-WAN solutions are differentiated. I want to come back to what Alexander wrote to me. He said, I know Meraki isn't Greg's favorite, but it's good enough for many clients who need a system that just works and doesn't require the sort of nerd knob twiddling that the manly man SD-WAN options allow. I love that. Manly man SD-WAN. Manly man. You know, he's pointing out that the Meraki here has some serious limitations. It only supports 2 Ethernet links and 1 USB. So it's not as robust as some of the others that have 4, 5, you know, support 4 to 6 links at the same time and things like that. But he's saying that, you know, there are simple, plain Cisco Meraki SD-WAN deployments. And I've heard this from many people who say Cisco Meraki works just fine for us because it allows us to go in and just replace our existing WANs, cut money. It's very simple. It has no knobs. There's nothing to fiddle with. I can't do anything fancy with it because they don't let me, but it works really, really well. So there's even an option to just go down to just something very basic, very simple. And this is where, you know, the Fortinets and the Merakis work, in my opinion.
Why would you overbuy? Why would you buy something with all the stupid nerd knobs if you don't need them? I agree. There's really a case to be made for that Meraki type of solution.
Yeah, and that was my point for the, you know, don't overbuy. Don't overspend. Don't choose the most expensive. Don't buy the biggest box. Buy exactly what you need and then plan to lock out. How do you rotate it out quickly and without any interruption to your service? That's the plan going forward.
I would say, talking about Meraki, consider your design. How much flexibility do you need? I was thinking of a podcast that we did with somebody, with Snehal Patel, who has rolled out thousands of SD-WAN devices in a retail environment. And we kept coming back and back to how design up front was very important because there are going to be corner cases and weird needs where you may need some flexibility inside the box. Does it support routing? Can you do routing with it if you need to, aside from just using the overlays that the SD-WAN vendor is going to supply for you? So keep your design in mind when you're thinking about it. Something else to keep in mind is how many edge appliances can be supported by a single controller. If you're a very large organization, scale is going to matter. Are you going to need multiple controllers? In that case, do you need a controller of controllers or an orchestrator of orchestrators? These issues are going to come up.
What is your 4G support? I was just remembering that conversation with Snell. His backup solution is basically terrestrial and then over the air as the backup option. So, okay, does that SD-WAN appliance support some sort of a 4G LTE modem or looking ahead 5G to give you that sort of a connectivity option? Not all of them do. Does the solution you're looking at have that? What are the options? Can you get all the carriers, the sort of modem, et cetera, that you're looking for?
There are also externalities to keep in mind. The SD-WAN vendors rely very heavily on being able to decrypt traffic to do their app inspection. So with things like TLS 1.3 rolling out, how is that going to affect their ability to get application identification? And even DNS over HTTPS. I asked an SD-WAN vendor about that. And because a lot of them also rely on DNS queries to parse, you know, where the traffic is going so they can apply policies. And that makes them a little bit nervous. They say they've got workarounds coming, but it's a thorn in the side. And so these externalities, things that you can't control, the vendor can't control, are also going to affect your purchase.
Yeah. I think there's answers for that, because we can, instead of relying on, you know, seeing DNS and seeing unencrypted traffic, you can now do a lot more fingerprinting and stuff. And they can do machine learning to know that this destination IP address belongs to that service and things like that. So I'm not so sure that that's an end in it. Like, the increasing amount of encryption is a problem.
I like that you just cited machine learning as a solution. That,
I was going to say, come
well,
on.
We've spoken to, we have actually, this is an area where this is actually what they're doing. I've spoken to, you know, we did shows with ExtraHop talking this year about how they're using machine learning to identify packets, flows, and to be able to extract information and say, I know what that flow is because of the fingerprint that I've created. Cisco's SD Access talks about that as far as how they're applying malware detection inside of encrypted traffic flows. They're using fingerprinting derived from machine learning to detect it in the campus. So,
And some of these SD-WAN vendors, if you opt in to share your data set with their global aggregated data set, their machine learning actually improves. So
yes.
I just am amused, Greg, that you were, you know, cited the rainbow and unicorns option as a thing. All right.
There is a white paper in Ignition where I talk about the difference between machine learning, artificial intelligence, and deep learning, and define the two. And I very carefully use the word machine learning here, because taking a very large amount of packet data and flow data and then analyzing it for known bad traffic is actually not very difficult. And I've spoken to people about it, and they've said, when I say not very difficult, it's really hard, right? But it's not trying to use the general case of AI to automatically route traffic for you without you knowing what's going on. It just doesn't, you know, work. It's not. You analyze this, you know what malware looks like, you can to learn about it, you can identify it. So in this case, I think it is right to say that vendors are genuinely using machine learning or something like it from various threat detection feeds and so forth like that to fingerprint traffic and to be reasonably accurate in detecting it. So I'm more comfortable that that is a solved or a solvable problem in the short term than I might otherwise have been. I would normally be quite cynical like you, Ethan. Obviously, your cynicism is much greater than mine.
Well, I think that raises a question to present to the SD-WAN vendor. What is your, have you built out the capability to do machine learning? Because that's not just something that you, that's easy to do. You actually have to design and build for that as well. So,
Or you could buy it. You can actually buy it as a feed. So a lot of the SD-WAN vendors buy a threat detection feed from a third party. And then what you need to be researching is whose feed are you buying? And what's the quality of that threat intelligence?
One more thing that I would raise to push back on your SD-WAN vendors is ZTP zero touch provisioning. And this is, again, something we cover with Snehal in that podcast, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Everybody says ZTP and they hand wave about it. You just plug it in and it goes, but there's always a little bit more to it. So maybe ask them to sort of walk you through step by step what that actually means.
The big one, what happens when I plug in and I don't get a DHCP address from my vendor? I don't have a mechanism, therefore, to call home. What's my fallback process to get that box provisioned? And there are answers to those questions, but you need to walk through it with the vendor and figure out what they give you.
Yeah. I think zero-touch provisioning is actually can get quite complicated, especially when you don't just plug it into the internet. One of the things that is true is you don't need an expert to go and deploy these boxes on site. You need a moderately competent computing professional or technology professional, but they don't need to be a networking expert just to plug these things into the internet connection if you can get an Ethernet handoff from the ISP, of course. That may or may not be.
Yeah, and it may not even necessarily be anyone on site. It may be that for certain circumstances, you're just pre-provisioning the box on site and then shipping it like the olden days, just maybe less complex because you need to have that box on a site where you can have it phone home and get its configuration before you ship it, something like that. I think Snehal described a process like that in that show.
Yeah, they're using the controller to actually pre-generate the config. So they go into the controller, click it all up and say, here's my new branch, use these IP addresses. And then the SD-WAN software actually says, here's the configuration, put that in the box, and then they ship that to site. That's a sort of a, you know, if you're going to do a lot of rollout and you're concerned about it, look for that feature. Ask for it.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up the show. We've had a good conversation. If you've got insight you'd like to share, hit us up on packetpushers.net/FU to follow up. We love to get your feedback. We've been doing it on Network Break, and we're happy to introduce it on other podcasts as well. If you want to tell us where we were right, where we were wrong, or just add your own experience, we love to hear about it. And we also talk about it because it helps inform our conversations. Guys, any last thoughts as we wrap up?
Stop spending so much on networking and get used to the idea that it's a consumable and throw it, you know, you need to buy more, but you need to replace it more often. So if spending more money means you can throw it away quicker, that's worth doing. Don't get attached to your network. Start thinking about it as a consumable and needs to be replaced regularly and often.
Yeah, I'd agree with the low cost thing. Everyone's used to this huge six figure spend that's going to last for years, and it's the next thing that we're doing in networking. And if you can change that model, start spending less, and look at networking more as a cheap consumable that you can rotate out, so you can keep up with the technology that changes, because it's all rapidly iterating. Vendor consolidation's happening, new software coming out all the time, new features and functionality, new requirements being laid down a different business because of this very active legislation that we're seeing happen around the world now relating to privacy and so on that impacts everybody. Hey, you got to be able to keep up with that in an easy way. And if you've got hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of kit sitting on the books that's got to be depreciated, that complicates your life. So go cheap if you can.
All right. That's a good way to end. You can find the show notes for this episode in your podcatcher. And if you visit packetpushers.net, you can discover over 1,000 other episodes from across our podcast network for networking and infrastructure professionals, along with our community blog and news feeds. Don't forget ignition.packetpushers.net. We teased that a little bit. That's our premium subscription site. It's got the white papers we talked about, plus courses, including Ethan's QoS course, a brand new Ansible for Networking course. And we'll have a course coming up on SD Access in the new year. So keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, you can tweet us at Packet Pushers, follow us on LinkedIn, rate us on Apple Podcasts, and once more, become a premium member at ignition.packetpushers.net. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.